All right, welcome to this Where Did the Road Go midweek podcast, and I'm joined by Joshua Cutchin.
Good evening.
And for the first time, Tim Banal.
What's going on, Soraya? Thanks for having me on the program. I've heard a lot of good things about your show. I've tuned in a few times and really enjoyed it, and a lot of the folks down in Dallas at Paramania were swearing by it, so I'm a fan, and I'm happy that you finally got around to hearing about who I am and everything.
Well, I've been subscribed to you on Facebook for a while.
I'm just busting your balls, Susan. Don't worry about it.
And your show is, tell people about your show before we get started.
Oh, God. The show is Banal of America Audio, or BOA Audio. It's been around since 2005, since before there were podcasts, and or essentially in the early days, in the cave podcast days. And I don't know. We've been doing it forever. We have had a ton of guests. Josh has been on. Everybody you can think of pretty much has been on the show. And it's been a long journey. So, and actually, we hit a little bump in the road back around the start of the year, but we just finally dug out of the mud today. And we're doing four shows next week, or this week, I guess. So right now, I should have pretended like we were live, because I'd be like, I'm right in the middle of the slog. Right in the middle of the slog, Soraya. I don't know, I'm out of my wit's end here. So I'm doing four shows next week or this week. By the time you hear this, folks, there's still two more shows left, I think. I don't know what time Soraya will put this online and everything on Wednesday, but we got essentially four shows.
Nice.
William Zabel, Columbine conspiracy guru and conspiracy just all-around maestro, and Greg Bishop, awesome guy. Everybody, I think, in the audience and here right now knows who Greg is. Micah Hanks, back on BOA Audio after a long absence. That's going to be fun.
Yeah, it's been a minute. Yeah.
And Mike Cleland will finally appear on Banal of America Audio. He's been wanting to be on the show for a long time. I have no idea why, but he's wanted to be on the show. So I finally was like, I guess if I'm doing shows.
I always like having Mike on, actually.
He seems like a nice guy. I talked to him when we were setting up the interview. Seems fun. So I'm looking forward to it. So, yeah, that's what that's the gist of the show.
Nice.
Yeah,
nice.
Can't wait for it.
So, what we're going to discuss tonight is, and I guess Tim should give us a little background for people who are not familiar with him. We're going to discuss how our views on the paranormal and these different subjects have changed and why. And Tim, where did you first get interested in this stuff?
Well, I was interested as a kid. Then I went to college, and obviously other things came up. And then I got out of college and kind of bummed around. And, I graduated in like May 2001. I'm going to give you the long version of the background, if that's all right. And
sure.
So I graduated in May 2001, and then, like, obviously, 3 or 4 months later, 9/11 happened. Kind of, it was just sort of like a shock to the system, obviously, for, like, a lot of people, everybody. Changed the world. It was really amazing. And I guess that kind of, like, caused, like, my record to skip, let's say. That might be the best way to put it, you know? And started thinking about, like, why things happen, all that kind of stuff, and that led naturally, after a few years, after, like, a couple of years of just sort of wondering that and doing other things, to the Jim Mars book, Rule by Secrecy. I found it in the library, stumbled upon it, read it, and that opened the whole gate up to this. And so I didn't really have an opinion about all. I kind of just figured there were, like, I figured the conspiracies were real and there were nefarious forces, like, I don't know about running the planet, but certainly, like, pulling the strings on a lot of stuff. But I obviously never knew the names and all the history of it till I got into this. And now it's like, you know, there's all these players. It's like pro wrestling. There's all these characters and everything. So it's a lot. The whole paranormal, parapolitical field is like pro wrestling, Soraya. So
yes.
I've been meaning to, like, write all this down in one thing. But it's quite the parallel. And so, you know, so that was kind of it. And I got into UFOs. I always loved UFOs. UFOs and Bigfoot were, like, my two favorite things. And so it was like, when I first got back into it in, like, 2003, I was pretty sure that they, like, must be close to figuring it out, because it was, like, 15 or 20 years since I first kind of had heard about UFOs as a kid. So I was like, well,
right.
Well, I've been off at college. I hope these UFO people have figured this thing out. This is... You know, and then it was, I really thought that they had or were on their way, but
years will have passed at that point. Years, I tell you.
Yes. Yeah. So I got, I picked up that thread right as the exopolitics disclosure movement was picking up, so I've kind of grown with that whole thing. And at first I was like, this is awesome, they need to do this. And now, obviously, 13 years later, it's like, I don't have any faith in all that and shit. So, you know, I've got my whole view of that idea of what to do about UFOs and what the government knows and what we should be expecting the government to do and all that's completely changed from when I first got into this. So I'll stop talking now because I need a sip of water.
Yeah,
Josh,
I feel like when you get into this field, it's almost like the stages of grief or something. Somebody should do the 10 stages, 9 stages of ufology or something. Because
I don't know about you guys, but it's like when I first, I don't know, it's like maybe it's my personality type, but it's like when I first sort of got, when the spark gets lit, it's like this feels like it encourages like this ravenousness where you need to know more and more. Like it's just like never, it's like this, you know, like that, what's that thing in the Little Shop of Horrors? You know, it's like you got to keep feeding this monster of like the mystery.
Audrey.
Yeah, it's really, it's really, it's crazy. You know, I think it has an effect on people. You know, a lot of people who are like, you notice they seem super obsessed with this stuff.
I think the not knowing is what gets people so super obsessed with it. The you know, where they think the answers are right beyond their reach, and they think they got them, but they can't quite prove it. And I think that can sometimes create that level of obsession. You see it with conspiracy theories as well.
Well, yeah, because I mean, like, it feels like a lot of times all the puzzle pieces are on the table. It's just, oh well, I can figure out how they fit into place, and then, you know, it never quite does. You end up having to cram. You end up having to cram a couple of pieces in where they don't quite fit and being like, well, that's a close enough fit.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like people, the super conspiracy subscribers, this is kind of why I fell out. Like, I think there's like a lot to the whole conspiracy idea, but it's like, it's too vast and complex to really wrap my mind around. And I think a lot of people who are into it, like, they have an all or nothing sort of attitude. It's very prohibitive for me to look at it deeper, because it's like, why, you know, it's the whole idea where like something happens and they're like, everything's a false flag. It's like, they never really take into account just like human nature and chaos and that kind of thing. You know, there are some things that are a conspiracy, you know, but it's like, I think what really turned me off was the Sandy Hook thing. That was like, once that whole like movement grew, it was like, I just found that whole thing kind of reprehensible. I still do. You know, like, those kids fucking died, dude. There's no, I'm sorry. Like, it's like, we went to the fucking moon, and those kids fucking died. There's no, like, ifs, ands, or buts about it. So anyone who espouses that idea to me is like, I don't know, you know? It's disappointing on a human level.
Yeah, and the irony that I've thought of in the past is that, you know, just with anything, you can push it so far that you end up becoming the thing that you hate. And a lot of the people who are quick to cry sheeple end up having the same knee-jerk sheep-like reaction to, you know, different sort of catastrophes and different sort of tragedies, where they automatically jump to the false flag thing. And I think it happens sometimes.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think it does happen sometimes. And I think there are, you know, there's some weight to that. But I don't think every single thing that happens is a false flag. You know?
No, definitely not.
Right,
there are, and I mean, you're also, they assume there's one group of people out there doing everything, and I think you have competing groups of people doing all kinds of different stuff for their own gain and their own motivations. It's not like this one dark group who's like, well, we're just going to pull all the strings on the entire planet. Well, if that were the case, they wouldn't really have to pull too many strings.
Yeah.
Right. I think it's like I think it is like that 1984 idea, but I think the mistake that people make is they're like, they think that it's like, it has nothing to do with geography. That's the point I'm trying to make. I think it's just like there's different cabals, and as long as those cabals fight each other, maybe there is someone even above that's like, that's perfect. This is just the way we want it. We want, like, you know, we want, you know, crazy, this tension between everybody, you know? So,
well, you look at some of these shootings and you find out that these people were hearing voices and they, you know, okay, so maybe they were just schizophrenic, or maybe they were being experimented on by the military to see what they could, what would happen if they do this. And then they went nuts and shot people, and the military goes, okay, well, now we know.
And just like the UFO phenomena, the answer is probably a mix.
True, true. I mean, we know they can manipulate people's moods and their minds, and they can project things into people's heads. And it doesn't mean that's what's happening, but they have the technology at least to do it, so it remains a possibility.
Who's this, like the, you know, the nefarious government?
Hmm?
Who has the ability? I lost your train there. Who?
Well, the military or anyone in, so you know, in the government.
Yeah, yeah, nefarious forces, yeah.
And that's the other thing. People say the government, and the government's made up of so many different aspects of groups of people.
Right,
there's not, you know, it's not one solitary entity. In fact, half of them don't even talk with the other ones, which is part of the problem.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. If anything, it's like small agencies within the government that, like, we almost certainly don't even know the names of or anything. So,
yeah, and all embedded deeply with the military-industrial complex.
Right, exactly. So I don't think, I kind of lost, my zeal for conspiracy in that sense, because it's like, these people, there seems to be like a new generation of conspiracy people who are like, you know, the truthers, you know, it's so bad that like the mainstream has ridiculed them to the point where like truther has a connotation in the mainstream for like insane conspiracy, insane non-believer of whatever is accepted as the mainstream. And it's like, once you reach the point of parody, it's hard to get back from that.
True, true. But I think that was the aim all along, regardless of whether they were onto something or not.
Oh, yeah, no, it works perfectly with the conspiracy. That's the great part about it.
Marginalized by making fun of and parodying.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's like, let's let them, it's kind of like ufology in a way. It's like, let's let them make fools of themselves. We don't need to even do anything. They'll stir themselves up and then everyone will laugh at them. Let's just make sure everyone laughs at them. We'll make, you know, we'll kind of make it a joke.
Feeding frenzy of absurdity. Yeah.
I think, however, the paranormal in general has kind of come back from that a little bit, where it used to be 15 years ago, if you told someone you were interested in this stuff, they'd be, oh yeah, okay. Now you talk to people about it, and they're like, you know, I am kind of interested in this too. And it's, and as much as I hate to say it, I think it's all the exposure on mainstream television, in movies, on these reality shows that have made it sort of okay and less ridiculous for people.
I think so. I think I hate to be like that guy, because I don't think it, like, I do think there's a connection, but I don't think it's the connection that like so many people are making. But I will say that I think this year is like a really up year for UFOs, and it could be like a pivotal year, but not in the sense where obviously everyone's all freaking out about this Hillary Clinton thing. And I think the connection there, less that she's going to have anything to do with disclosure. I don't think that's anything of, you know, of like earth shattering proportions is going to come out of her becoming president and doing anything about UFOs. I am very skeptical of that. But the pivotal part is how it's seen by everybody else. And that's, I think, interesting to me this year, especially because it's funny. I do a lot of like news searching every day, and I saw today there was a big article on CNN, or today, well, I guess last week, if people listen to this Wednesday, sorry, folks. There was a big piece on UFOs on CNN, the website, and I guess in the next edition of the Weekly Standard, which is like a pretty, it's certainly mainstream. It's like serious, I guess, you know, for political people. I mean, I don't really take it that seriously, but for people who are like sort of, you know, of that ilk, it's quite the established magazine. And nonetheless, they have a big article on UFOs in there, too. So I thought that was really interesting. It's like CNN and the Weekly Standard fucking within hours of each other just put out these UFO stories. That's interesting. It's like, so I think people, but then on the flip side of the coin, it's like the only people who ask Hillary Clinton about this UFO thing is the entertainment media. So that's really disappointing. And it's like it's come up enough. I mean, I watched a lot of the debates until the election was pretty much decided like a month ago. And
you watched all 60 debates?
Yeah. I keep them on in the background, you know. You know, and then I watch the highlights like on through the websites and stuff. But what irritates me, and I hate to be in agreement with Steve Bassett on this, but I do agree. What irritates me is like they just say a lot of the same things over. They do the same issues. It's like, what's the point, you know? And it's like, let's talk now about healthcare. Let's talk about this thing that we talked about in the last debate. And it's like, that's all well and good. What irritates me is like, just bring up this UFO thing once, you know? The irritating part too is like it never got anywhere out of off of Hillary Clinton. You know, like Donald Trump never said anything. He needs to say something, and then maybe we'll, as crazy as it sounds, maybe then people will take it seriously if Donald Trump says something. But you know, it's I'm hoping maybe it'll come up more, you know, in the election, and not so much that she's going to do anything about it, but just like it gives us a good sample of what people and the mainstream think and how far the mainstream is willing to go with this thing.
Well, and here's my thing is like how many relevant, attainable, simple, straightforward campaign promises are just tossed by the wayside whenever someone's elected, you know, non-UFO related campaign promises. I mean, that's, you know, That's why I've regarded a lot of any sort of presidential UFO chatter as sort of a non-starter, non-story for me.
Well, the only thing that makes this different is like she's the front runner, and I really, based on the lay of the land now, it looks like she's going to be the president. So it's like that's pretty. We're not talking about John Kasich, who got like laughed off the stage of the debate for mentioning his UFO. This is like. I'm not old enough to remember the whole Jimmy Carter thing, but I presume it kind of came up when he was running for president. But
I don't remember. It might have been after he was president, actually.
Yeah, it might have been. I don't know. That's a good question.
Yeah, I don't know that. But I guess the point I'm trying to make is like it's someone who almost, you know, who has a very, very, very good chance of becoming president. So that's pretty significant. But again, she's already hedging her bets and saying like, if it's national security, I can't say anything, of course. And it's like, so they're going to release some shit that's going to be completely, you know, inconsequential.
Yeah, the thing is, the nature of the phenomenon itself, I don't think lends to any kind of easy release anyway. I mean, people, when they talk UFOs, when they're saying, you know, Hillary's going to look into UFOs, it's, are there aliens visiting us? Well, if it doesn't turn out to be aliens and it's something more subtle and not so easy to explain to people,
right?
They're not going to release it there because how are they going to do that? How are they going to explain to people? Well, there are things along here with us that only some people can see some of the time, and we can pick them up on infrared cameras, but not all the time.
And they don't seem like
we don't
they
really
want
know
hurt
what
us.
They are.
Yeah.
And if they figured it out, saying, you know, oh, and they also happen to always exist a micromillimeter from your face, you know?
Yes.
Something Gordon has said once. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. People can't, you know, they'd have to feed us a really basic version of the whole story anyway. And that would be, you know, the only thing that would be really interesting about all that, a lot would be interesting, but I think it would be, I would love to see, I always talk about how ufology is like stagnant. I would love to see like the post-apocalyptic fallout of ufology after, like, if there ever was an official disclosure. To me, that would be more interesting than the actual disclosure. It'd be like, oh, okay, yeah, I know aliens have been around. Like, how is Stan Friedman going to take the news?
Exactly. Yeah. So how have your views on UFOs changed, Tim? I mean, were you an extraterrestrial guy at first, and are you still?
Yeah, I mean, I was an extraterrestrial. Everybody starts out as an extraterrestrial guy, I think, because that's just sort of like how you're taught, you know, by osmosis of aliens.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, your parents don't even tell you about fucking UFOs. If you watch cartoons and shit, you kind of figure out they come from alien. You know, aliens fly them. It's like that socially ingrained. And I guess, you know, I was thinking about it tonight because I knew we were going to be talking. It's like, I guess part of me, I'm a real non-believer in the ETH. I think that it's way more complex than that. But I think there's a romantic side of me that still kind of hopes that the ETH part is, like, real. And I think there's, like, a realistic part of me that's kind of like, well, it stands to reason that if there are other species out there and they're smart enough to get off their planet, maybe, you know, maybe they'd come here or something. So I feel like it's almost like an Occam's razor thing. But I also think there's something way more complex than that going on, you know? And I think since there's these things we don't know the answer to, like Bigfoot and ghosts and UFOs, like whatever the overriding, there's probably other intelligences that know what these things are, and therefore they know we know we don't know what they know that we don't know what they are, and so they can use those things also to manipulate us. So it's like Bigfoot is. I think Bigfoot is probably like a creature of some kind. I hope there's a part of me that like really, really hopes that. But also in turn, like whatever the intelligence is that might be behind UFOs, if it's aliens or whatever, or you know whatever sort of like that trickster element or the psychological part of your brain that makes these things, if that's even something, it's like it conjures up also that thing, you know? So it's a duality.
Right. Right. And yeah, it seems like so many of the cases come across like they're physical creatures. And the only thing that stops me from going there is that we've never found the bodies. I mean, the very obvious questions of, why don't we have one in our possession if that's the case?
Right, right, yeah. I think I don't know, think this, but I guess I hope this. This is kind of like my hope, but I hope, I don't say it again, that the Bigfoot has some kind of like, has to have some kind of skill beyond merely like what you'd see from an ape. Whether it's like super advanced intelligence, you know, the ability to manipulate things with its hands, telepathy, like straight up telepathy, or like some kind of ability to even disappear. I think it could be something even as fantastic as that. I hope it is. You know, it's like if no one knew about these animals, and I got a starfish and I brought it, you know, up. I guess a lizard or whatever. I guess the idea is like these little things that can like regenerate their limbs. If we didn't know about animals like that, and I got one, and I caught it, and I made it happen, people would never even believe it. They would say that's like physically impossible. So, how do we know that there's an animal that can kind of somehow manipulate the energy around it so you can't see it? You know?
Sure. Sure, absolutely. And that kind of lends a little into the whole paranormal explanation as well.
For Bigfoot, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And you may ask, if maybe they're not what they look like either. I mean, we look at them as sort of being the missing link almost, and maybe they're not that at all. Maybe they're more advanced than we are.
Some sort of parallel parallel evolution. Half ape, half cuttlefish, so it can blend into the... blend into the forest.
Exactly. Yeah, or chameleon. Yeah.
Of course, when you get some of these reports in not heavily forested areas, you got to wonder, well, where are they going? I mean, when you get them up in the mountains in the Northwest or Canada or something like that, yeah, there's plenty of places for them to disappear to. But when you get them in like Florida and, you know, Ohio and stuff, it's kind of like, all right, so where are they hiding?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah. Ohio's got some of the places in Ohio actually have a lot of dense forest. The ones that always fascinate me are the ones that are, you know, I've run into a couple of encounters from like New Mexico. It's just like these,
yeah, like a desert one. I've heard of, like stuff like that, or yeah, like I've heard of, like scrub. You know, ones like on like in Hawaii. It's like, how the fuck did it get to Hawaii? Not even like could it live there or anything. It's just like how Hawaii sprung out of the ocean. I think we're like 99% sure of that. It didn't break off from like a continent. It was built by volcanoes and shit. So it's like, how would the Bigfoot even get out to Hawaii? You know? So
Exactly.
That's when you really have to like consider the paranormal element. You know?
And Joshua, obviously, we know you started on with the ETH, I'm assuming.
You know, it's kind of interesting. I started out, I think I've mentioned this in the past, but like the things that keep me involved in this field now are the things that kept me from getting involved in the field, because I was under the assumption that the ETH was the kind of the main game in town, which I guess to a certain degree it still is. But yeah, all the goofy things, like, you know, the different types of entities and all the inconsistencies and all of the things that seemed to be more magical than technological, I said, well, obviously it can't be anything because it's all, you know, there's too many variables here. It's not little green men, whatever. And then I sort of got involved in it, and I feel like I had a lot of, because I was listening to guys like Tim and Greg Bishop and folks like that, I feel like I had a really compressed evolution, personal evolution. You know, I've talked in the past about like Mysterious Universe being my gateway drug, and then they started talking about, you know, altered states of consciousness, which sort of spun me off on that idea. And then listening to folks like I said, like Tim and Greg, sort of put me through the ringer and made me jump pretty quickly to questioning all this. I mean, I only really started listening in earnest to Mysterious Universe back in like, I think, 2012. So this is like my fourth year in it, and I'm already into this, like, let's talk about perception and not about little green men phase, you know?
But
to me that is just 1,000 times more interesting than, you know, the cut and dry ETH, which is probably one of the reasons that I'm not, you know, I'm not a big ETH guy. But yeah, it definitely compressed really quickly, and I've kind of been on this consciousness kick for a while, and I'm just now coming around to a more, well, I find myself leaning more, or being more open to, that's the proper way to articulate it, being more open to a magical spiritual hypothesis, which is something that I'd never ever thought I would have said a long time ago, you know, like, because as I've mentioned before, I hear people talk about magic, and I've been like, yeah, magic, whatever. But my understanding of that has changed by leaps and bounds, in probably the last 2 or 3 months. And, in terms of what that means, and, you know, my misunderstanding of that framework, and it's nudging me in a direction that is kind of uncomfortable for me, but I kind of like that it's uncomfortable. You know, while still trying to maintain this fierce agnosticism that I really value and I really, really look up to in other people that I know.
And I think that agnostic sort of viewpoint is what you need with a lot of this phenomenon, to realize that we don't know, we may never know, all we can really do is ask questions and see where they may lead us.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same reason that people tend to be turned off by evangelicals and people tend to be turned off by staunch scientists, is whenever somebody says, I have all the answers and I know, and it is this way, it just, you know, it just completely turns me off. There was this ironic tweet from Neil deGrasse Tyson a while back. Let me see if I can bring it up right quick. It was basically something to the effect of, the reason that we educate ourselves with scientific thought is so that we can question others whenever they bring up things that are erroneous. I was like, well, that's sort of an ironic stance, because here you are, you know, sort of positioning yourself, at least in popular culture, as sort of the guardian of truth. Or the gatekeeper, rather, of truth. And it sort of rubbed me the wrong way a little bit. It was, oh yeah, when you train your mind how to think, you inoculate yourself against those who desperately want to tell you what to think. That was the tweet.
Oh jeez.
Which is yeah, exactly. Which is like the most ironic tweet that I've ever seen.
Well, because usually when someone like that makes that comment, they're talking about religious people.
Yeah.
They're saying, well, you know, you need to inoculate yourself against the religious people who are going to tell you what to believe. Instead, listen to the scientists who are going to tell you what to believe.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. That's pretty ridiculous. It just seems like who tweets that kind of self-important shit, you know. He wasn't quoting anyone either, right? He was sort of like pontificating.
I think that was an original quote of his. And you know, it's so easy because people hear this and they have this knee jerk reaction. One of my best friends, if he was listening to this, would have this knee jerk reaction. You're being anti science. No, I'm being anti asshole. That's what I'm.
Right. I'm anti Neil deGrasse Tyson tweeting shit things. You know.
Yeah. Or things with a lack of nuance. You know, that's the thing that kills me.
You know, I grew up studying science. I love science. I think science is fantastic. It's given us amazing things. It doesn't mean that everything we know now is 100% right and will never change and we should never question it. Because everything we know today at some point in the future will probably be proved wrong in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, and the weird part, though, is, too, like, everything changes, like, it changes incrementally. You know what I mean? So it's like you never really notice. I'm trying to think if they, you know, I'm trying to think if there was ever, like, well, put it this way, dude. I don't think they'll ever, like, cure cancer, but they'll, like, significantly reduce it to the point where at some point people will wake up and be like, oh, only, like, you know, 5% of the people who get cancer die now. You know, it's like there'll never be, like, some landmark thing where they're like, they cured cancer! So, yeah.
Well, that's because there's so many different types of cancer.
But that's what I mean. Yeah. Like, things happen incrementally where it's like like, I saw an article today that was, like, some researchers, I forget where, but from a legitimate university, and people can Google the details of this story, they'll see it. And their argument is that, like, you couldn't figure out if there was alien life out there, the Drake equation. But now let's take another look at it. Using the information that we now know regarding exoplanets, which is that there's like a shitload of those, and that a certain percentage of those are likely to harbor life, and then they compose a new Drake equation, I guess is the point. And the argument was not what the Drake equation is, which is like, is there intelligent life out there? Their question was, has intelligent life ever, what are the odds that intelligent life ever came up or something like that? So ever, not just now. And they found it to be, excuse me. The question was, what are the odds that life on Earth is the only thing that came up in all of history based on all of these planets? What's like the mathematical? And it was like 1 in 4 trillion. So, like, their argument, the headline is, like, scientists say intelligent aliens exist or existed, you know, that it has to be, it's scientifically impossible for them not to have come upon, you know. But they may have done it, like, it may have happened, like, millions of years ago, and they're already wiped out. So, but it's just interesting, and that's the incremental change I'm talking about, you know. It's slowly people get more indoctrinated into this, and that's why I think UFOs and aliens and that stuff's going to be even more commonplace as more generations come along, you know? Why can't these crazy social justice warrior people online turn their attention to UFOs? If we had that kind of pesky force behind us, you know? Like, I love Bernie Sanders and everything, but he's lost. So maybe all the Bernie people can just start flocking to UFOs.
Just get on the UFO back.
We need some energy into this thing. So, yeah. But that's I don't know where I got off on that tangent, but it's incremental changes. So, you know, this article about that, it's like, so if there's ever life out there that can be like, we told you it was pretty much possible, then you know. And that's like, I think the whole thing with the exoplanets, it's like, well, I mean, shit, my lifetime it went from, like, there's no way aliens are out there to, I think most, like, scientists kind of say, like, it's possible or something, you know what I'm saying? It's thawing. The idea is thawing, but who knows?
Well, going back to what you said about, you know, just in terms of people being behind some sort of movement, I mean, it's hard enough for anything to get done when there's a mass consensus about something. And, you know, these puny little cries that we have, please tell us about UFOs, please. It's not going to get a damn thing done.
Right.
It's not really good. That's not a tidal wave. That's like a pebble in a pond.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's part of the problem. Yeah, with the UFO thing, it's really there aren't really like the numbers behind it, and it's like there's really no reason for the numbers to be behind it because no one's gonna. There's no real benefit to the government telling us about UFOs except to satisfy that question in the minds of those of us who've asked it.
Yeah, I mean, you look at book sales for like movie books on like cinema versus books on UFOs, and it's not even comparable, you know.
Right. Right.
Well, you know, the thing is, too, for every person that is really interested in UFOs, there's 1,000 out there who don't care. They don't understand how it could ever impact their life. It's not something that they would ever hold important, even if they're vaguely interested in it and think it's interesting. They're not going to sit there and be like, oh, yeah, that's something that's really important that we should find out. They're just kind of like, yeah, that'd be interesting.
Right. Right. The people like that watch Ancient Aliens and then turn it off and get on with their lives.
Right.
There's tons
right.
of people like that.
Well, but there are also people, I mean, like one of my good friends, one of my groomsmen at my wedding is a hardcore, you know, very materialist, atheist kind of guy. And I remember we were talking about Bigfoot one time, and he's like, so what if they discover Bigfoot? It's just another animal. It's not going to change the world.
Yeah, and that's true.
Like, yeah, exactly,
It would redeem the people who have been saying Bigfoot's out there, and that would make them feel great.
Yeah, it would change their world. It would change the world.
I think that's still a little bit naive, though. I think there would be some massive fallout, regardless of what Bigfoot is. I mean, if it's
what's your definition of massive, though? Like, well, a lot of legislation and shit that doesn't really. I mean, unless they discover my theory on disappearing Bigfoots, then they could be like, oh, this animal fucking disappears, and that Benal guy mentioned it back in 2016. He was right.
No, I want credit for that. I think that the fallout would be in one of two ways. If Bigfoot is a human-like ape, then there would be a huge overhaul of the national park system. There will be a huge public consciousness of how to keep people safe in the woods. There will be basically the whole outdoors industry, I think, would have to sort of reconfigure what it does.
And I guess,
And B, if Bigfoot is an ape-like human, then you're into all sorts of indigenous people rights issues
that
will automatically spill out of that. And this isn't even saying like what it says about our place in our personal evolution as a species.
Well, see, the thing is, though, because they're so elusive, I don't know that those initial changes – if they turned out to just be another animal and it took us this long to catch one – you know, I don't know that it would really change anything. It would be like, well, we know they're out there, and you're probably never going to see one.
Yeah, but be careful. But I think it's weird. I feel like once they get the one Bigfoot, I feel like all of a sudden then they'll get like, you'll start seeing like they'll get one, and you know they'll get one maybe two another one. Excuse me, 2 years later. You know, then maybe three years later, all of a sudden, fucking, they'll get two of them in 1 year, and it'll be like that until slowly. Then people are like, oh shit, there's, you know. But I feel like it'll be crazy. I think once they get one, somehow it'll open the Pandora's box that more are found. That's just the theory, though.
And I mean, again, I don't think it's necessarily that like Bigfoot would need protecting or anything. I just think that the public would go, you know, there will be a sector of the public that would be like, oh my gosh, we have to protect these beautiful animals. And again, if they're ape-like people, there will be a sector of the public that would be like, these people deserve reparations for being ostracized and for not being believed in. You know, I totally think that's...
I'd be more worried about that, not like from a political level, but it's like, just leave them alone. Don't try
They've
and
been
like,
doing fine
put
without
clothes
us,
on them. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like, clearly they don't want anything to do with us, you know, despite our interests, so let's just let this one go back, you know, and it would be interesting. I really pine for the UFO thing is like tumultuous. You know what I mean? It's like if we were talking about how, you know, would people's lives change. It's like if the Bigfoot thing, like some dude living in Baltimore has no effect on whether or not he has to go to work the next day. But like with UFOs, it might really tear asunder a lot of society. Maybe not like immediately the next day, like it's not gonna be riots and shit, but maybe over time it would really disrupt the world.
What I always think of is there's this one shot in the Simpsons movie, which I think was probably the only gag in the Simpsons movie that worked for me, where the big event's happening.
Yeah, really.
Whatever the big event was happening. Well, it's been a long time since I've seen it. I think like there's some sort of shadow, some sort of Mr. Burns contraption coming over Springfield, I think. But it shows the church and the bar, and everyone in the bar runs out of the bar and goes into the church, and everyone in the church runs out of the church and goes into the bar.
Exactly.
I think that'll be the UFO fallout.
Right. Right.
Well, now, what if we discover Bigfoot and we find that Bigfoot's actually quite a bit smarter than us?
How would you know it was smart? Like it has a spaceship?
Well, no, but I mean, if it could communicate with us.
Have you seen an iPhone? Like, what's a Bigfoot going to do that's going to impress us?
Well, I guess it depends how you define intelligence.
That's
if
true.
It has a better understanding of reality and it doesn't need all our little trinkets to get there, I think that would be a completely different type of fallout. If we felt like we weren't the most advanced species on the planet, the most advanced species is hiding from us.
Yeah. that would be very interesting. I mean, you know, it sort of is tied into this idea that we've talked about before is, you know, we define technology as being made of plastic and metal and you know, microchips and stuff like that. But what if they have this like sort of natural organic perspective on technology, you know, where it's where they are so in tune with their environment and what they can do that it's like, you know, Survivor Man times 15, you know.
Yeah,
they don't need cars because they can open portals and go from one place to another.
Anything's possible. Yeah,
and I think the thing with UFOs, I mean, to me, I feel that the whole subject's important because I think it says a lot about us. In the end, I don't think we're ever going to understand the UFO phenomena without understanding more about how we perceive, how we understand things, and how it's interacting with us.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the key. It's funny. It's like ufology hasn't even caught up yet, but it's like that's the, I think, where it needs to go, and sort of accepting that it's a dance and figuring out more about maybe what we can about the witnesses. And it's like we kind of, it's a very frustrating situation in a sense, because if you look back on these, it's like we may have like 60 years of cases and everything, but at the end of the day, it's like we may not have actually gotten the information that was important. You know,
yeah.
We may actually have not, and we have to actually start from scratch and try and figure out new questions to ask people that see UFOs. I think that's like a critical type development that needs to happen, but we don't even know really the questions to ask.
And I discovered actually in talking to Mike Clellan that the two UFO encounters I've had both happened at major turning points in my life, which was not something I ever thought about. And, you know, I described these events to him, and he went, "So what was happening at that time?" And I was like, "I don't know." As I'm pulling together notes and looking up exactly what was happening at that time, I'm like, "Oh, well, look at that. It was when everything was going to hell, or everything was changing in a very distinct manner, more so than it had in the past."
Yeah, and you were in a liminal state. Yeah,
and it's like, okay, so why then? You know, what should that have to do with if it was a nuts and bolts phenomena, that would not be the case. It would be very random, and it's not a random phenomena.
Yeah. So it comes from, it may not necessarily even be coming, you may not even be creating it, but you may be giving off like a sense of, like I said, liminality, you know, like some intelligence out there may pick up that you're in this transitional state and be like, "Oh, this is interesting. What's this guy? What's wrong with this guy? What's this guy doing?"
Or there's some kind of interplay with the universe where we're creating these things without having any idea. I mean, kind of, you know, we've both talked to,
how about this? What if it's this? I just thought of this when you said that, because it's like, what if people are in a state of turmoil, right? And they subconsciously like know what they want to do, but they cannot make that decision. And then they have some anomalous event happen to them that is purely created by the mind in order to allow them to get over whatever this block is. So then it's a situation where it's like, you know, I saw a UFO, it was amazing, kind of like blown away for a few days, and then, you know, after that you're like, you know what, I am going to go back to school, or whatever, you know what I'm saying? It's like, you need something, it's your mind creates it so you can get over whatever the block is, or whatever is causing this, the subconscious root of the turmoil.
and self-enabling or something. Sorry, go ahead.
You and I both have Eric Ouellette on talking about his Poltergeist connection. And I think what he's talking about is very interesting. I don't know if he has it quite right, but I mean, I think there's substance there that these things could be something we're creating and not something necessarily in our minds, but that we're creating out there. You know, he didn't quite seem to go that way with it when I talked to him. Like he was thinking on a different type of a scale, but for individual, you know, for an individual sighting, it could be that, yeah, other people could have seen that too, but it really just came from one person.
Right. Yeah. Go ahead, Josh.
I was just going to say, I feel like I don't know how much of quote unquote the answer, capital T, capital A, he has, Eric does, but I feel like he has some pieces that are in place that we need to try to plug into, because there's something really, 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 really solid, some really solid ground to stand on there. I really think so.
Right. Exactly. He's right up against it. You know, I think he's, but there's still a few more, you know, it's, we're still a few more episodes away from getting to, you know, who the big bad is in all this, but it's,
he took a couple of those millions of puzzle pieces and found two that fit really good.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And it's, but it all goes back kind of like to what we've been saying here, you know, it's just, it comes, there's a mental aspect to it. And, you know, again, it's, though, that doesn't preclude that there's just aliens that fly around. You know what I mean? It's,
true.
We're sending all kinds of stuff out there in space, you know, and I would, that's another, like, sort of sci-fi fantasy of mine. How awesome would it be instead of a UFO, per se, like a spaceship came down, you know, that didn't have aliens in it. It's essentially like, what if like another planet sent a probe here? How awesome would that be, you know, as a story? You talk about, they say, well, fake alien invasion. They could do a fake alien invasion, but not like with the invasion part, and just do that. And so have like a probe come down. It's like, oh, there's no aliens here. They're just looking to see, you know, hello, you know, so it'd be interesting to see how that would unfold. Like I said, if we go around to like writing sci-fi, that would be a story. Like, how would people react? What would they say? You know, would it be better for people because they didn't see the aliens? Like, the aliens aren't around, so, you know, and will we even be able to figure out what it was? You know what I mean? Like, it comes down, floats around, turns around, leaves, and it's like, was that God? You know, it's like, that was fucking, you know, a lot of people would be like, that was God. That was God. You know, and it's like a seminal video, like the Kennedy assassination. It's like, it's just like, people just, you know, everyone looks at the video, you know, that'd be a really cool movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, I keep on coming back to it. I don't think that there is one answer. You know, I imagine what it would be like to be a crab on the floor of the ocean and to have other crabs be like, have you heard about whales? People say they believe in whales. I saw a whale. And all the other crabs go, yeah, everything that we can't see, that we can't describe in the above us is a whale. And like, well, yeah, they're whales, but they're also, you know, sometimes there are distortions of light, and sometimes there are fish, and sometimes there are sharks, and sometimes, you know, it's not always a whale. There doesn't mean that there aren't whales, but, you know, it's a combination of things.
Mm. Right, right. That's actually a good analogy.
Thanks. Yeah, I saw a trailer for the sequel to Finding Nemo, so that's, that's probably nice. What's going through my mind.
Very nice. Yeah, I think it's interesting. It really is. It's interesting. I don't know what. I lost my train of thought there for a minute. It's about the whale thing. You wonder if we'll ever figure it out. Who knows?
So Tim, what would you say with the researchers or whatever you encountered that changed your view on this the most?
I've Jacques Vallée, but I always say Jacques Vallée. You know, I hate to keep going through the same story. So Jacques Vallée, Jim Mars, on a personal level, Lauren Coleman, Greg Bishop, two people that like I got to know as people who really sort of helped me become more of a well-rounded person in this field. I'm trying, I mean, you know, it's hard. When you produce a show like mine, it's like, I feel really bad too about it because I'm like a empathic person to a fault. So it's like, I've interviewed like hundreds of people at this point, and I do feel like, I, you know, you talk to them, you set up the show, you do the show, you have a great conversation like 95% of the time. I do, at least, as far as like, oh, you know, I really felt like I really jive with that person, and, you know, they seem like a great person. And then, like, you go your separate ways, and it's like, I feel I have a weird, like, hang-up about it, where it's like, I actually kind of feel bad, and then, you know, you cross paths with them later, or you email them later, and it's like, oh, geez, you know, I'm sorry I fell out of touch after that great conversation. So it's a weird thing. So it's funny, because there's so many people that, you know, have influenced my thoughts on all this, you know, but... Like I said, Greg and Lauren for sure, and Filet, and I thought Eric Ouellette's stuff was really good, and I'm leaving out a whole bunch of people, you know. It's Adam Davies does amazing work going around looking for these things, and now with all these crazy things that are happening to him, and I think Marie Jones and Larry Flaxman are outstanding researchers. They don't get enough credit. I think their books, each book is like, like, kids should be reading these books, not because, well, like, kids who can understand them, I guess. High school kids should be reading these books, because they're so informative on things that you just take for granted and all are also very esoteric, like numbers. Like, where did numbers come from? You know? Mm-hmm. Like, the actual, like, they ask questions that, you know, that, I guess you just, it's like the little kid in the car, like, with his parent, like, why? They attempt to answer some of these questions, like where, you know, where did the zero come from, and like how do they figure it out, and like all that stuff. So that's just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, all kinds of folks. Stan Friedman, I consider like, I don't know what I consider him. Sort of like my spiritual grandpa at this point. You know, I think he's just absolutely. I think he is bar none on the. I've said this to many people. I'll say it. I don't think I've ever said it on the air, but it's like, I think he is the greatest UFO advocate that ever lived. And I think that you can't even... I'm sure that there's maybe an argument to be made for better ufologists, but there's no argument that can be made that Stan Friedman wasn't the best UFO advocate that ever lived. He's just the best, you know? And, you know, so I think he's awesome. So I hold him very dear in my heart.
Cool. What about you, Josh?
Oh, people that have influenced me, or that changed
your view of things.
People that have really been a catalyst. Man, I keep on banging this Greg Bishop drum. getting into those ideas about perception, you know. And you know what? I've got to give a shout out to Ben and Aaron over at Mysterious Universe. You know, they were the first people to make me. They were the people to break through my veneer of, you know, well, psychedelics just make you hallucinate, you know, that sort of dismissive attitude. They're the people to really puncture that. I think that Mike Cleland is somebody whose work has really changed my mind, you know, or made me think about things in a new and different way. You know, this idea that you can walk this tightrope of something being, you know, real and unreal. Terrence McKenna, although he's not really a UFO guy.
It doesn't matter, though.
But, yeah, well, then yeah, definitely Terrence McKenna. You know, this idea that we can sit in this ill-defined, mysterious area of what reality means, and that's okay, you know. Or, yeah. You know, or this idea that, you know, we can not have the language to articulate things, and we can realize that, you know, one of my favorite quotes from McKenna is about how, you know, we talk about a lot of these quantum terms, quarks and mesons, and they're just little tiny shingles that we epoxy to the face of the universal mystery. And once we have enough shingles on there, we say, hey, we've solved the mystery, but it doesn't really solve the mystery.
Yeah.
And you know what? I hate to keep on banging the drum, but I've been on a real Gordon White kick lately, who does the Rune Soup website. A lot of the things that he's written have really sort of made me, you know, wake up and think of things in a different light. And of course, this is all in addition to, you know, the folks like Jacques Vallée, you know, the folks like Lauren Coleman. You know, I admire both those guys, and they both have really given me, you know, sound foundations in those certain avenues of thought that I really apply every time I deal with any of this stuff.
Nice.
How about you, Soraya? Guess, who are your influences?
Oh, there we go. Turn the tables.
Yeah, well it's funny because, you know, people always say on my show, oh, you never say anything about what you think or whatever. So it's like, if we're getting sort of waxing philosophical, Soraya, why don't you enlighten us?
So again, Jacques Vallée with me. I mean, because I was very firmly into the ETH until I read Dimensions, which was the first Vallée book I read. And it was a combination of that, Whitley Strieber, and Kenneth Ring that knocked me out of the ETH idea.
Mm.
Because with Strieber, and I think it was in Transformation, I started realizing, wait a minute, he's having these experiences, and these experiences are mirroring experiences I'm having, but mine are coming from the occult realm. But they're the same basic picture.
Right.
And it started making me really wonder what the hell is really going on here. And obviously, when I first read Dimensions, I was thinking, well, okay, so the extraterrestrials were pretending to be fairies in the past. And as I got away from having that ETH idea firmly implanted in my brain, I started understanding what Vallée was saying better. And Kenneth Ring showing the combination of or how the after effects of the abduction experience and near-death experiences are the same. I mean, just blatantly the same, made me sit there and go, well, how can this be a nuts and bolts phenomena and mimic the death experience? And so I think that's where I started. That and Michael Talbot's Holographic Universe.
Yeah. Nice.
So those are the ones that started me off. Later on, it was people like Patrick Harper. Reading his book completely blew my mind.
Yeah, I should have said that. Dang it.
George Hansen, his Trickster in the Paranormal. I sat in awe reading that one and just trying to wrap my brain around some of the concepts he was coming up with.
Yeah, I hear really good things about George Hansen. I haven't dug enough into his stuff, but Jerry Manning swears by him, and everything I've heard about him is mind-blowing stuff. So, yeah, he sounds awesome.
His book is not, as Josh and I were just talking about this too, it's not a book you can just sit down and read. It's a book that you read a chapter. The chapter might be 3 pages long, and then you set it aside and let your brain try to wrap itself around what you just read.
Yeah. That's kind of how I was with Eric Wallet's book in a lot of ways. Like, I tried reading it, but as I got through it, I had to kind of like stop for a while and be like, all right, where am I at with this? What does this mean? Where am I going on this journey that this guy is taking me on? So it was,
yeah. And he looks at it from such a different perspective.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
A fresh perspective. That's the thing. We need more fresh perspectives.
Exactly. Yeah.
And as far as inspirations, I mean, I wouldn't be doing this show if it wasn't for Graham Hancock. So,
yeah,
that was more because I didn't listen to talk shows. I wasn't interested in talk radio at all, ironically. And Graham posted he was going to be on Coast to Coast, and I went, well, I want to hear Graham talk. And, you know, a year or so later, I'm listening to all these podcasts and all this other stuff. And if it wasn't for him, I probably never would have picked up talk radio at all.
When was this?
Oh, God, I don't even know. It would have been probably after Underworld came out.
The movie?
No, the book.
The fuck is... I don't even know what Underworld is. It sounds familiar.
By Graham Hancock.
Oh, I was like... I'm sorry. I apologize.
Kate Beckinsale movie?
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, I didn't see a lot of commercials for the Graham Hancock book. I saw a lot for Underworld.
That was a milestone for me, man. Kate Beckinsale. That's...
Yeah, Underworld's where he explores all the underwater ruins.
Ah, yes.
And I think he was going on coast. I know Nori was doing it at the time, and he went on Coast to Coast. And then at some point, he put up a torrent with all his Coast to Coast experience or appearances. And I was like, oh, I want to hear those. And
wow,
looks like
listened through all of those. And
looks like Underworld was 2002.
Yeah, and thinking about doing Where Did the Road Go, I wasn't really sure. I'd be able to do, you know, I was kind of like, am I going to be able to talk to someone on the level of these authors and really know what I'm talking about? Because I didn't know anyone who was really deeply into this stuff.
Yeah.
So I could talk to people about it. They were interested. But if I was talking out my ass and didn't know it, they wouldn't know it either.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So I had had a friend of mine who actually did know a little bit on my music show. We did a whole show talking about paranormal subjects and you know, interspersing it with music. And that I was kind of like, okay, that went well. People liked it. Cool. And then I approached Walter Cruttenton. And I said, you want to come on the show? And he went, sure. And I'm like, all right, so if this goes well, maybe then I'll start trying to make my own talk show.
Well, you came along at a good time because it's easier now to get a show going. Back in the day, it's funny you said that thing earlier. I apologize, Josh. We're going to briefly delve in, and to the listeners, of course, that we're going to briefly delve into the world of wrestling for one moment because
hey, that's fine, man. No worries.
Soraya would be amused to know that. Like the only reason I even have a show, the only reason why how the whole sort of like thing came to me was because I was a subscriber to the Torch website, and Wade Keller is like way he's the guy who runs the Torch, and
right.
He was like way ahead of the curve on all this, and at the time this was like 2005 or so, it was like you couldn't even. It was called like just download the MP3. It wasn't called podcast.
Right.
It's like download the daily update. It's an MP3. You play it on your computer. It's like a radio show, you know. And then I was like, it was like these newfangled MP3 players. You can put it on your MP3 player, and here's the different things you can use. And so at that point, I was like, oh, so you could actually use this to make a radio show. So I was like, that's how I ended up even doing. The show in the first place. If I hadn't realized you could do it that way, I probably would have, God knows what the hell would have happened to me.
I didn't even think podcast-wise. I just thought radio-wise, since I already had a radio show on a radio station, I figured, well, maybe I can talk them into giving me another hour for a talk show.
Oh, yeah, you're on regular radio up there, right?
Yeah, not these midweeks. These are just podcasts, but once a week
it's... I've been using my indoor language.
But, you know, that was my first thought. It wasn't do a podcast. It was get it on the radio, and then, you know, after I got that set, it's like, oh, and I can podcast it, and I can put it on YouTube, and I'll put it anywhere I can that people can hear it, and hopefully they'll like it.
There you go. That's a lot of work. See, I'm too lazy to do that. That's one of the things I don't like about this explosion in podcasting. You'd think since I've been around for a while, I'd be successful at it, but I'm too lazy to like do any of the work that all these other people do, like put it on YouTube and make sure it's on Who's It's and Whatnot's and the app reader and the podcast distributor. And it's like, just go to the website and download it however you can. I don't know. So it's like, I've probably lost thousands of listeners because of my attitude about that. It's just I just don't have time to figure all that out.
Yeah, and it is time consuming. As easy as some of this stuff is made, it's still time consuming.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Waiting for uploads and all this mess. Yeah.
And I've been having internet problems, which I've posted about and I think talked about briefly that for months we've been having internet issues, and they finally got solved. And yesterday, the internet went out again, and I was like, oh, you've got to be kidding me. And I called the tech that I had been dealing with who finally figured everything out and fixed everything, and I said, it's out again. A week and a half, it's been fine. Now it's out again. And he called me back today to tell me that someone apparently shot the box with a shotgun.
Your box or the one like?
Well, like down the road.
Oh.
So they must have been out hunting and hit the box, and he's like, there was literally buckshot in the line. He's like, I have no idea how you had internet at all.
I tell you, it's Art Bell's podcast whackers. That's what it is.
Yeah, exactly.
They're coming for you, Soraya.
Yeah, it's the podcast star whackers.
well, they missed a little.
Oh my God.
One thing to sort of bring it back around to us finding the road, as it were. You know, there's so much to complain about in esoterica, to use a banal favorite term, banal sanctioned term. there's so much to complain about in terms of people doing things and the way people act in Esoterica, but just that little thing where we were listing people that have changed our opinions and really been formative really reminds me that there are a lot of good people out there in this field doing good things. You might have to look for them sometimes, but there are a lot of good, well-intentioned people who have their heads on straight. And I don't think we talk about that enough in a lot of times.
No, you know who else? There's two other people I need to kind of mention since I went through this whole list of how I got into this. Paul Kimball and Micah Hanks actually have helped me out a lot starting off on this podcast. Micah actually was the first person to ever interview me, and that kind of got me into being able to talk a little more about myself on this stuff, because I'm generally not interested in talking about me. I want to talk about other people. And Paul has done some shows with me that made me really question things that I hadn't really thought about before. And was super supportive of everything I was doing. And it was the two of them definitely helped out a lot when I was starting out.
Nice. Both great guys.
And
great
of course,
thinkers, too.
Micah, of course, was my mother bird in all this. He was pushing me out of the nest. So, yeah, I agree with that.
So... And, you know, Paul gets a lot of criticism because he can come across as pretty harsh. But I find even when he's being harsh, he usually has a point behind it. He just doesn't always express it in the nicest way.
Exactly.
We did a whole show on hypnosis. And, you know, I had kind of been under the impression that hypnosis was was something that people could use if it was used right, and it didn't necessarily create false memories. And he just kind of blew all that out of the water. And I double-checked the stuff he said, and I'm going, oh, no, he was right. Okay. You know, and suddenly the whole hypnosis thing just kind of went out the window, and I was like, all right, this is not a good tool for this, and no wonder everything's so screwed up.
Yeah, hypnosis is a problem. You got to give a lot of credit to Vaney and Ritzman, though, for this whole Emma Woods thing. If they hadn't, they kind of blew that thing up and blew up abduction research, and it's never been the same since. And a lot of the fallout of that was the hypnosis thing. You know, I think it really shined a big spotlight on how rudimentary practiced it is. I was trying to go over the right words. But, yeah. It's scary. And then again, like we talked about how it could be decades before, before we start asking the right questions, it's like, well, if you take into account all these problems we're kind of understanding now about hypnosis, it's like, now you have to start from scratch on abductions, too, in a lot of ways.
Yeah. I mean, because people do remember some of these experiences. It's not that. It's that the information's so filled out by hypnosis, and it may not have originally been there. And the more this stuff gets well known and publicized, the more the brain is likely to fill it in with that information.
Right.
It's not because the person's being dishonest. It's just there may not be anything for the brain to put there. And the brain goes, well, I think this is probably what happened.
Yeah
exactly. And then they're like, I all of a sudden remembered something. And it's like, no, you just, didn't.
It's like an internalized echo chamber. Keep on reinforcing your same misconceptions over and over again.
And at that point, it's impossible to pull out what the real experience was versus what the brain may or may not have created around it. Because you can't say that all recalled memories are false either. It's that we don't know. It puts it in that completely questionable category where you're like, it could be real or it could be that your brain made it up. And there's no way to tell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and, looking at cases like the Emma Woods case. I mean, I looked at – it was actually Paul who brought that up. I had never heard of it. And
oh,
I'm
geez.
Looking
yeah,
through –
Yeah, more people need to know about that story. It's bizarre.
It is, and I'm looking through it going, what is wrong with this guy? And then I heard him on – I want to say it was Skeptico. And I'm listening to him, and I'm listening to how sure he is that he has all the answers to this. And I'm thinking, suddenly his behavior makes a lot more sense. Because what I'm looking at and seeing is, what is wrong with you? Why are you telling this girl this? Why, you're not investigating this. You're manipulating this situation. But realizing that he thinks he knows all the answers, he has this down, that's exactly what he's doing, because he thinks he's responding to something he fully understands.
Right. It's very, like I said, it's very bizarre.
Yeah.
But it's sad, too, because you want to hope that everyone's doing like the, I don't know though. You wonder who, if they're trying to do their best work or what, or what the hell's going on, you know, where it's like, oh geez, turns out the people we thought were investigating this may not have been doing a very good job. And two of them are dead, Bud Hopkins and John Mack. So all we're left with is David Jacobs. So it's like, fucking abduction research is dead.
Yeah, I mean, I think the best ones are dead. I mean, yeah, I would toss Carla Turner in there as one of those people, the two that, you know, that was doing really good work before she passed. Yeah.
And then even with, you know, John, if I'm not mistaken, John Mack was a certified psychiatrist who, you know, learned, you know, knew how to do hypnosis properly, but that still doesn't validate the information as much as it would from conscious recall.
Right, right.
You know, whereas Bud Hopkins kind of picked it up, you know, and then things started. And he did say, you know, he would hold certain things out and he'd find them popping up again and again in the accounts without him ever telling anyone what they were. And that's interesting, but it could also be an effect of a collective unconscious type of thing, too, since he never told anyone what these things were that he was citing.
Yeah, I don't even know. I don't know what to make of it, honestly. I don't know what to make of it.
I think someone like Bud was genuinely trying to help people.
Well, that's what I was kind of saying earlier. It's like, I'd like to think that everyone was trying, you know, even at their worst, I like to think that they, you know, you wish for the best in people. So,
yeah. It's like, and I believe I believe David Jacobs believes what he's saying and what he's doing. I just think that he might be doing more harm than good.
Yeah. I think at this point he is just by being around, you know, and I don't mean that like, I think he needs to like step away because it's just too volatile a situation. But weirdly enough, ufology, like, they don't, like you said, you never even heard of this story till like relatively recently, and a lot of people, a lot of other people haven't either. So it's like he can, you know, he can appear at the MUFON Bakersfield weekend or whatever, and no one's going to bat an eyelash.
True. True. Yeah. It's the field is just so muddy at this point. It's hard to pick out what where to go with it.
I know where to go with it. I know where I'd like to go. I know where I'm going with it.
Where are you
going with it? Magic?
No. Just the tiny things. That's what I keep on coming back to is the tiny things. I remember Tim when I spoke to you back last year. You said to me, you know, here's an idea for a book, small thing.
Did you write the book about animals and UFOs? Because if you did, you have to dedicate it to me.
But if I do, I would dedicate it to you. Tim had the idea.
That's another interesting one.
Yeah,
fucking awesome idea for a book. I just don't have time for it.
Yeah, and there's a little bit of preliminary work already done on that. There was a series of articles in the old Flying Saucer reviews that talked about that a little bit. But yeah, it's a great idea for a book. But these are the things that I think that we really need to turn our focus to. I see people bringing stuff up. What's up with that? Oh, I don't know. Let's move on. You know.
I agree. I can barely do my show though. Much less write a book about. How animals react to UFOs. I'd like to know.
You should. It'll be so much fun. We could do it together, Tim.
I would do that for sure.
But I've been looking into it because, you know, one of the things that's really been bugging me is how the shadow people sometimes wear fedoras, right? We've all heard this.
Uh-huh.
And everybody's always like, why is it a fedora? I don't know. Why is it a fedora? Huh. Let's move on. And I don't think anybody's ever really tried to dig into it. There's not a book in it, but I'm looking into it for a blog post. And I think I might have found a little bit of something. But the same thing.
Like the first time it was mentioned? Like, what are you trying to figure out? Like, why people keep seeing it? Or if it's like an archetype
why would shadow people wear fedoras and why do men in black like fedoras? That's sort of my thing, and as it turns out, the term
I like that soundbite. That would be great.
Why?
That's kind of my thing.
That should be my ringtone for you, Tim. Whenever I call you.
There you go. Yeah.
It is what it is.
So exactly. So all right. So what is? So it's interesting. Yeah, I'm trying to think of other instances where there's fedoras in action, but I can't.
Yeah, and again, it might not be anything, which is why I'm not writing a book on it. But I think that there's a blog post there, and I've found some stuff that kind of makes me wonder. If anybody wants to do some digging, the term fedora actually is borrowed from a French play, I believe. Which was the name of the play was Fedora, and it was a play about like nihilism, and it starred a starlet who used to sleep in a coffin.
Oh wow!
So that's not really anything yet. Like I said, this is just my first little step into trying to figure this out. But that all feels weird and kind of occulty.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. Yeah.
A little thread to maybe pull on. So.
Yeah,
we'll see. It might lead to something. It might not. But again, these are the sort of things people make these remarks. Like, you know, why do they always wear fedoras? I don't know. Let's move on. And they don't actually take the time to try to figure out what that could possibly mean. And I think that I would like to think that. Well, it's at the risk of it sounding like I'm banging my own I'm banging my own drum. I've used it like three different times. At the risk of sounding like I'm tooting my own horn.
Tuba.
Yeah,
tooting exactly. Your own horn. There you go. Tooting patting myself on the back. That's a good one.
I think that this might be. I really think that this might be sort of like an avenue of escape for us. I think it might be, you know, an exit strategy for us out of this cul-de-sac that we found ourselves in is to really look at these things that people have written off and try to think and see if there's perhaps some sort of greater insight that we can get from that. And it's not, I mean, like I've just scratched the surface. Anybody out there who wants to think of stuff, I mean, there's plenty of other things that people have noticed and they've moved on from.
Right.
So yeah, I think that there's some real value in that.
I think the logic becomes, oh, well, it looks like he's wearing a fedora. Well, that's not important.
Yeah.
You know, it's not worth spending the time on. But if you find some kind of unconscious connection between the fedora and the shadow, you know, why a shadow person might be seen wearing a fedora, that may tell us something about the phenomena that would otherwise be overlooked.
Well, and there's so much in all these subjects, but especially, you know, spirit apparitions, sleep paralysis, and the UFO phenomena, there is so much theater that you have to think that every choice to some degree is deliberate. I don't think that, you know, yeah. I think Nick Redfern just said the other day that he doesn't think that, you know, whenever the aliens were taking soil samples and they looked surprised, you know, back in the 50s, they probably weren't really surprised. It was all part of an act. And I think that everything about these phenomena are chosen deliberately. And if they are chosen deliberately, then you have to take everything as important.
And I would agree with that. I don't think that people accidentally see UFOs or accidentally have these, you know, different paranormal encounters. I think they're very deliberate. They're almost like a message. They're trying to communicate with you.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just wondering, like, I saw it again in an article like the other day. I don't know why. A guy said this to me once, a hypnotist I went to quit smoking. I asked him if he ever dealt with abductions, and he made this asshole joke where he's like, how come now everyone has cell phones? You never see any UFO videos. And I saw that like same joke like in an article today. It was like, oh, God. There's tons of UFO videos is my disgust with that, and photos and everything else. But the part of me is like, I wish beyond the UFO, aside from the UFO thing, it's like, it doesn't seem to be, you'd hope there'd be like a good alien picture, but no one can seem to do it. So, but I guess the same applies to Bigfoot. So there's a part of me that's like, you'd think that would happen by happenstance, but it never seems to occur.
Yeah.
Which leads me to believe that like it comes from, you know, that there's some kind of mind thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, the one huge UFO I saw, I had a video camera sitting right in my back seat, and it never even occurred to me. I was too busy looking at the thing, trying to determine what I was looking at and trying to, you know, piece together what I definitely could tell and what I was assuming.
Mm. Yeah.
Because what I saw was a lot of really bright lights.
Everybody says that when they have a camera near them anyway, so yeah.
Yeah, and that sounds like a BS excuse, but it really does resonate with me on some level.
I wasn't thinking about proof. I was
right,
like, what
exactly.
Am I thinking?
Everybody, yeah. That's the most predominant reaction to anyone who has a camera nearby. It's like, I never thought to even take a picture. Yeah, it's because you're seeing something like otherworldly.
Yeah. Like, and with that experience, it didn't even feel otherworldly. I was assuming I was seeing some kind of aircraft or something, but as I'm eliminating what it could be, I'm going, all right, that's just a very bright unknown object.
Gotcha. Well, have you ever seen a UFO? I've never seen one.
No, man. Every now and then I'll see a little light in the sky, and I'm like, do it. Do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Come on, kill me. Do it now. Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny. I don't even... No. I'd have to be really convinced that it was a UFO, too. You know what I mean? It's like, I don't know if I even... Well, it's cold nowadays right now, but it's like, I don't even know how often I look up in the sky in the first place. And even if I saw it, I would have to be certain that, like, it was a UFO. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, go ahead.
In that respect, it's just a matter of you can be certain that it's something you can't identify.
Right, that's what I mean. But it's like, I'm not, like, it would have to move in a way that was like, okay, it's definitely not a star or a jet or something or a space or a satellite. It just did like a circle in the sky, you know, or whatever.
Yeah. Or even a drone.
Yeah. I was thinking about that the other day, actually. I was talking a while ago now that I was talking to Greg Bishop about this, and it's like, I'm sure people will talk about this, but it needs to be maybe more examined, going back to what Josh was saying, too, about people asking questions and never answering them. But I think everyone talks about the black triangles and how they're like connected to these spy planes, you know, like they're so similar that there has to be some kind of connection. That's sort of the argument. I think that we need to now take that sort of perspective and apply it to a myriad of UFOs dating back, I don't know how long, let's say maybe 15 years, and consider that they were drones that we didn't know about. Because, like, this drone thing only really exploded in the last 2 or 3 years, which means they probably had the drones for, like, 15 years before the public could ever get them. They can do things that UFOs back then... people described, like they're defying the laws of gravity because they're doing crazy stuff. And it's like drones, you know, especially government drones could probably do that kind of thing.
And I remember seeing video of, you know, UFOs over Area 51, and they had these lights spinning, and people were like, oh, humans couldn't survive that type of a force. And I'm thinking, so they're probably remote controlled, you know? I mean,
exactly. Yeah. And it's like, what's the, you know, what's one of the most common UFOs? Like an orb of light. It's like, how do you know it's not just a drone way off in the distance? And this is like 10, 15 years ago before anybody knew what a drone was. But no one ever, like, you know, I think we need a reassessment of this stuff in the sense where it's like, oh, wait a minute. Now there's other things that we make that actually look like UFOs too. I haven't heard anyone really say that. Yet.
Tim, I totally agree with you. And, you know, I think that every time a bit of new tech comes out, because you always hear that, you know, the black budget world is always like some, like 20 or 25 years ahead
generation ahead.
Generation ahead. So I think anytime new technology comes out, the first thing that you should do is to retroactively look back at old cases and see if it can explain some of them. That is a great point.
Thank you.
And when you were saying the thing about the cell phones and less pictures, and Steven Spielberg went on record saying something to that effect, oh, now the cameras are everywhere, we have less UFO videos. And I'm thinking, have you never done a YouTube search on UFO videos?
Right, exactly.
Because they're everywhere.
Well, and here's the other thing. How many times do you hear people looking at these things, and they look away, and they look back, and it's gone? I know that if I saw something in the sky, I would not want to take my eyes off of it to get my phone out to take a picture, because I'd be afraid it would go away, you know?
Hmm.
True. But the thing is, you know, not only are there more videos, but it's so easy to fake them that the fact that there are more videos is essentially meaningless at this point.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like the argument, though, I look at a lot of the, let's say, the UFO videos that, like, get popular. I have a pretty good idea of those, at least like last 6 months, it's become kind of what I do. And I would be willing to bet, at least the ones that like gain a lot of attention, I think like maybe 10% of those are faked. I think the rest are just like really either UFOs or just like really weird misidentifications.
Sure.
Or camera error or whatever. Like, there's a lot of stuff the camera does that people don't, you know. Like, I saw one that got popular, and I kind of, like, realized quickly right away I was watching it. It's like the guy is, like, driving past this, quote-unquote, UFO, like two orbs, as he's going down the highway. And it's like, this is the interior light reflecting off of his window, you know, and he's freaking out. Like, this, you know, if he rolled down his window, it would disappear. So I think like things like that, but I guess what I'm saying is like I'm skeptical that people have the, you know, there's always like one in a million or one in a, you know, 20, who knows, but like I guess it takes a certain combination of skill, time, desire to fake a video like that, and I think those people who have those three qualities are few and far between. As far like they should be doing better things with their lives than faking UFOs.
And then, you know, so let's say that someone takes an image of a UFO doing weird things in the sky and they put it up on YouTube. It hasn't really helped the phenomena, us understand the phenomena at all. I mean, it's just, okay, here's another one. We know the phenomena exists. It's just that we can't explain it. And this video just shows us, look, someone else got a picture of a UFO, you know?
Yeah, there's a quality to it. You know what it's like is like the it's like cat videos. You know, it's like, look at this cat, man.
Yeah.
Oh my God, it's adorable. And with UFOs, it's like, look what this UFO did. It flew right past the, you know, right past the Empire State Building. And this, you know what I'm saying? It's like, it's all it is. It's cat videos.
I cannot remember the last time I clicked on a UFO video, actually. I'm the complete opposite of you, Tim. I, it's not that I assume that they're all fakes, but it's impossible to tell anymore. And half the time, it's like you're looking at a dark screen with this yellow smudge in the middle of it, and it's shaking everywhere.
Yeah. No, I know what you mean. I do. I generally have a pretty high threshold for like goodness. I guess is the point. You know, like I'll see something and go, "Wow, that was actually," you know, if it really piques my interest, because there's a lot of them that are just like, oh, "Get the fuck out of here with that."
Yeah.
And I remember seeing some videos where it was like, oh, you know, there's a gray standing outside in my field and I could see it. And this time I videotaped it and it's like, it's a cutout. Are you freaking serious?
It's a what?
A cardboard cutout.
Oh, yeah. See, that's the people that are like, they don't have, unfortunately, they don't have the skills. They have the time. They have the effort. They don't have the skills to fake anything. So it's
they would do it. They would be smart enough to do it in just like a split second, you know, oh, and it ducks away, you know, oh, it's looking in the window and it's gone. And it's like, okay, it's so clearly fake to anyone who knows how to do this stuff.
Yeah.
But to the average person who maybe doesn't know much about video and they're going, oh, that was interesting, you know, you would see all these positive comments on the video of people convinced that it was real. And it was like,
Yeah.
You can't save those people. I long since given up. There are people, I find there are a lot of, like we talked earlier about like the idea of like people like say, oh, the sheeple. It's like, I've long since given up on trying to convert anybody. Like, I don't like even talking about this stuff with strangers and stuff, because it's like, you know, it's too radical an idea that they want to engage you in it. Or I've run into a handful of people that are skeptical. Most of them are just like, they kind of laugh about it, or, you know, they want to tell you some story, and it's like, I appreciate their stories, and I know that it's important for them to tell it, but it's, to me, it's like, I heard a million UFO stories, you know, so, no, it's kind of like, it's a tough field, it's very weird.
See, and I'm the opposite. I want to know what people think, why they believe or don't believe things. I mean, just so I can understand better. I want to hear people's stories. I want to know, you know, what they saw. And sometimes I can it helps me think about the stuff in a different way. You know, I'm the type of person who can talk religion or politics with someone because I'm not trying to push anything on anyone. I'm actually just more curious why people lean the way they do or believe the way they do. That's what I'm interested in.
I guess kind of what the sticking point for me is that I think, like, sometimes people, they just want, they want answers. They want you to, like, what do you think it was? That's what really, I don't mind the story. It's the question at the end where it's like, what do you think it was? It's like, I don't have any idea what it was. Like, you need to figure that out for yourself. This is your thing. I don't have any idea, you know?
Fair enough.
Yeah. So.
All right. Well, I guess we can call, bring this one to a close.
All right. Sounds good. Well, I enjoyed the conversation a lot. I feel like I haven't done a show, my show, any show, since January, and it's almost May 1st in a couple of days, and so it's like I was actually genuinely nervous tonight. I was like, oh, geez, you know, what the hell is this? So I found that actually, you know, I work here at the house by myself, so I don't really talk to as many people as I would like. I certainly don't like sort of talk about this stuff. You know, in I don't know, it's hard to explain, but like with an audience, you know what I mean? So
yeah,
it's been a while. So I thought I had some good points for a change and maybe some new ideas that I haven't had since I last did my show, you know, stuff that we talked about or things that, oh, can I also, I'll make one more prediction because I did one earlier. I think that whoever gets elected president is going to be seceded by their vice president. Like, something's going to happen.
Really?
Yeah. It could run the gamut. So that's not, like, anything bad, okay? There's nothing. I'm not saying anything bad. I'm just saying I think that the – I just have a feeling. It's like I think that somehow either – if it's Trump or Hillary, I think either one of them is going to somehow get in trouble. So
that could mean an indictment. Yeah, it could mean a lot of things. Yeah,
yeah, I think somehow they're going to be impeached, either one of them, you know. Or with Trump, it could be a military coup. Who knows? So, but I think that, yeah, I just get a feeling, you know. I feel like it's been, Kutch, you're younger than me. How old are you, Sarai, if you don't mind me asking? You talk about that.
I am in my early 40s.
Okay, so you're like maybe 5 years older than me. All right, yeah, so you may have seen this. I don't know. Well, you definitely didn't know about it because you were like a baby. But so it's like same with me. It's like I haven't. There hasn't been one of those presidential changing of power in at least, what, 30 years, 35, almost 40 years probably, right?
Oh, geez, Nixon? Yeah.
Yeah, since Nixon. Yeah.
So I feel like there's a sort of like repetition to history. And I feel like we're due for that. So, yeah, that's my prediction. I keep meaning to put it on Facebook, but at least now that I've said it on the show, it's out there for the masses. So please include that.
And where can people find your show?
Why do they want to listen to my show?
Because it's pretty good.
All right. Who are they? Do I know them?
Both of them.
Yeah. All right, I guess you guys can listen. The show is at binallofamerica.com, B-I-N-N-A-L-L of America.com. That's it. So check it out.
All right.
Dig into the archive, tons of episodes. And if you're listening here on Wednesday, we're in the midst of the four episodes in 1 week, spectacular. So tune in tonight at 10 p.m. for Micah Hanks and tomorrow night at 10 p.m. for Mike Cleland.
And you're assuming that by midweek I'm actually going to put this up on Wednesday like I always plan to, and it doesn't always happen.
That's fine. Whatever night, whatever day it goes up.
Yeah, yeah. If not, you can go back and listen to them on MP3.
Yes, exactly.
Exactly.
All right. Thank you, both of you.
And my pleasure.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys. I really enjoyed the conversation.
Yeah, take care.